What if you had to make the most important decision in your life today? In fact, you already have, at least for your life so far. We make decisions every day, but some of them can shape the course of the rest of our life. Intersections explores those decisions and their consequences. You choose to turn this way instead of that way. Why? And what happened next?
Welcome to Intersections.
We are in the lobby bar at Will Rogers Theater on Northwestern, and we appreciate them letting us hog a table table here in the corner for me to interview Aaron Cooper, who is an artist here in Oklahoma City, and a mom, and a wife, and a whole bunch of other things, too. So, Aaron, why don't you give us your elevator pitch? If you just get on an elevator with somebody someplace and they say, hey, what do you do? What do you tell them?
Well, I suppose it probably depends on what side of town and what elevator, but essentially I am the owner of Cooper House. It is a design studio. We do branding and websites for all kinds of really amazing creative businesses like restaurants. We've done some websites for Good Egg Dining, and we've also done a lot of websites for some lifestyle brands and some different things like that. So that's kind of my day job.
Yeah.
I've got an amazing team that I get to work with doing that. But I am a visual artist. I do paintings. I draw and things like that. And I suppose probably most people know my murals that I've done here in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. I've partnered with Amanda Bradway, and we've done a really big mural on Western Avenue, and we're getting ready to do another big one in Wheeler District, and I've done one for the Plaza Alley Wall. So that's kind of my hobby and passion outside of design, and I suppose that's probably what people know me for.
Okay, so that is a lot of stuff.
Yes.
That sounds like you live a very busy life, don't
yeah.
you? Now, tell us about your murals, because that's probably what people know you best for doing. They might look at some really cool websites and not realize that's like, you know, you and your husband Tim
mm-hmm.
just work really hard at that stuff. You do a great job.
Thank you.
But a lot of people might not know that's you, that's your work, your creative work that they're looking at. But I just meet people kind of on a regular basis who go, oh yeah, that, you know, I talk about interviewing you for 405, and they go, yeah, I know who that is. That's one of those artists that did one of those murals.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the murals that you've done so far.
Well, you know, the first mural that I did was for Western Avenue Association, mm-hmm. and it was the first year that they decided to do murals as part of Taste of Western. And
right.
When they approached me to do it, I said no. They were like, here's a crazy idea. I'm like, yeah, that's crazy. I'm not doing it. But then I thought about it a little bit more, and I thought, you know, this is a really amazing opportunity, and I think that if I, you know, pass this up, I will be really sad that I did.
Right.
So I reached out to a few artist friends and Amanda Bradway,
mm-hmm.
and she didn't even hesitate and said, you know, yes, I will do this with you. And so we took it on, and it was so challenging, but so wonderful to work with her and the rest of the artists that we worked with, and mm-hmm. I think the end product is something that I am really, really proud of. It was a big shift for me in my art career, and certainly has impacted basically everything I've done since then.
Can you tell people where they can find that mural?
Yeah, that mural is on 36 and Western. It's
yeah.
on the Bruno's Furnishing Building on the north side, kind of facing the church. It's 110 feet long
yeah.
and 19 feet high, so it's pretty hard to miss.
Now, there's kind of an unusual dynamic that came out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you and Amanda planned that or not, but people have kind of figured out how to put themselves into that mural when they're having photos taken of themselves in front of it. Tell us a little bit. First of all, did you plan that? Did somebody say, hey, if you did this, did you plan it? Or is it one of those serendipities that just kind of happened?
No, that was definitely intentional. When given the opportunity to do the mural, I think the first thing that was a challenge was that there weren't really many parameters. They really wanted us to express ourselves as artists, and we wanted to do something that would be really meaningful. Mm-hmm. And I think when I started looking at, you know, murals all over the world, particularly looked at some in Europe and just some different places, Brazil, and what a lot of the really great murals had in common was that there was some sort of interactive component for the audience. Because I've said this before about murals in general, but in a neighborhood or in a community, people start to feel ownership of that mural. This is my mural. When their relatives come to town, they will walk them down the street and show them this mural. So we wanted to have a way for people to insert themselves in it and share it and really feel like they could be a part of it. And so that was very intentional, especially given the subject matter, which is a beautiful Native American girl, and she's holding out her hands. And so you can kind of stand in her hands, and particularly that part of the mural, we surrounded the area above her hands just in white, so the rest is color, but there's this focal point where you're intended to stand there and be a part of
and
it.
And people have really done that, haven't mm-hmm. they? Like,
yes.
Like you were telling me that on Facebook, what?
Yeah,
you say on Facebook?
People share it and they tag us in it on Instagram and on Twitter. I mean, I feel like we get notifications pretty regularly of people, you know, sending us those. And we put our Instagram handles on the mural so that people could tag us. So it's really been gratifying to see. I mean, it's been up for a while and we still, you know, people keep discovering it. And it's really exciting.
Right. Okay. And then your other mural you just did by yourself, mm-hmm. How did we find that? That's a little more challenging to find.
Yes, it is. But I think that the word is really getting out about the Plaza Alley Walls project. It was a project spearheaded by Dylan Bradway and Chris Canaley and sponsored by Steve Mason. And it essentially it involves this alleyway that's kind of in the central area of Plaza District. And you kind of turn behind Bad Granny's and walk down the alley. And literally the entire length of that building on the back, there are murals created by local artists, all different sizes, different subjects, different styles. And Dylan gave me an entire wall back there. And it's really cool because it's like if you're coming up from one side, it's like as you come around the corner, you just see it.
Yeah,
and it's right there.
It's
really big.
Yeah, it's at 90 degrees to where you're walking
mm-hmm.
to the direction you have to walk when you come around the corner. It's not a great big alley, is it?
Mm-mm, no.
But that you know, that's the first time I've ever seen anybody go in and like a big long alley. Turn that into a functional front door type space. There's some businesses that have their front doors mm-hmm. on the alley now, don't they?
Yeah.
Right there.
It's tremendous. I've never seen it anywhere before.
Yeah. Whose idea was that? Steve Mason owns all of that building there. Was it his idea or did somebody else pitch it?
I don't know exactly the details, but from what I understand, I think Steve had the idea that they would develop that part of the building. And I think when Dylan and Chris got wind of that, they thought this would be a really great way for us to clean up the alley, make it more attractive, and really make it like an art installation that people can come and enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. And it is. I mean, it is now. I walked down that alley just the other day, and it's like, there are like several little businesses that have their front doors mm-hmm. on the alley back there. So the alley, essentially, they ended up making two fronts to the building, which is pretty smart commercial real estate work, really.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think it's really, really great. Very original.
And that was a really scary alley before that. I've kind of poked my head back in there before, and it was like grungy and dirty and old pallets stacked back there.
I'll be honest. When I was doing that mural, it was still a little scary. I was back there by myself. I'm like, the sun is starting to go down. I think it's time for me to go home.
But you made it less scary, didn't you?
I tried.
You helped make it less scary.
I tried.
Describe now what's going on in that mural. What's happening there?
Well, you know,
again, that's kind of an interactive mural.
Yes, and the next mural that we're doing in Wheeler District will also have that component.
Wow.
And I didn't like set out to be like, I'm going to make all interactive murals. But the thing about it is that as a female artist, it's hard for me to not get on my soapbox just a little bit about you know, our role, women's role in society. You know, I'm a mother to two daughters. And so it is just always in my mind, how can I impact the world around me? How can I like make a statement about what I believe, you know, is right and true in this world? You know, how can I do that through my art? And so I feel like the murals really give me a way to do that in a positive, uplifting kind of way. I mean, that's really just what I want people to take away from that mural, which is called Our Crowns Are Bought and Paid For. And it's actually based on a quote by another author. I've written like a long post about it on my website, ecooperstudio.com. And you can go there and read more about my murals there. And I won't pontificate on it too much. But essentially, the girl is supposed to be kind of a warrior. Okay. And essentially, you see her. She's got a fairly serious expression on her face. Mm-hmm. It was modeled by my nanny Brenna Betts, who's a really wonderful, awesome actress, and she's a lovely model and agreed to model for that for me. But essentially, this character is meant to kind of represent, you know, all the women who have worked to get us to where we are today. Mm-hmm. You know, and in her hands is a crown, and it's saying, you know, we've worked hard to get you here. Now, put this on and take us the rest of the way.
So the interactive part is
you can stand in front of the crown, and if you take a selfie, like some people like to do, then it looks like you're wearing the crown.
Yeah, it looks like she's placing the crown on you, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
You're being crowned.
Yes, right exactly.
There. Wow. Really great concept.
Thank you.
And so you kind of mentioned you're going to be doing another mural in the Wheeler District.
Mm-hmm.
Just for people who might not know, where is the Wheeler District going to be?
The Wheeler District is actually on Southwestern Avenue, and it's going to be built in the old Oklahoma Air Park.
Right, the downtown air park.
Yes, exactly. And so Blair Humphreys has invited Amanda and I to create a concept for a wall that they're creating out of shipping containers, which will be called the Wind Wall.
Okay.
And the Wind Wall is actually going to, you know, help block the, you know, breezes, as it were, in the Grand Plaza. And it will be kind of right next door to the giant Ferris wheel.
Yes,
that,
which they're constructing now.
It went up this week. Right. Oh, it's so exciting.
Yeah. So if you're driving by an I-40, you look south, close to downtown, you see a Ferris wheel being constructed. Mm-hmm. That's going to be in the new Wheeler Park.
Yes.
Addition down there.
Yes, exactly. It'll be at the very center of that community.
Yeah, on the south bank of the river.
Yes. Kind
of. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Well, why don't we get to the main question that we ask here? You have such an interesting life. I want to be sure and get some of that in. So Aaron, I have told you ahead of time that I'm going to ask this question. What is the most important decision that you ever made in your life?
Well, yes, when you told me that 5 seconds ago, no, I'm kidding. He told me a little while before. I had some time to think about it. I really feel like there are two kind of major decisions that I've made in my life that has affected things. But when I really sat them up next to each other and thought which one really impacted the trajectory of my life, I have to say that when I was 18, growing up in a very small town, there weren't a lot of opportunities afforded to me, but I chose to join the Air Force to go get an education and to, you know, get a career and get the heck out of that tiny town. And that decision, I have to admit, I made it a little capriciously. I didn't put a ton of thought into it. I wasn't like, I am going to go do this thing and this will be my career and it'll change everything. But it really did. It really did. Because I think that if I had not chosen to join the military, that leaving that town and getting to see anything different or getting to try out any of the things that were offered to me in the military would have been, you know, very hard for me to do. And so it definitely affected every little thing that I did after that.
So like a lot of people who need a good opportunity at the end of high school, you went into the military. And it's interesting to me, you're the second person that I've interviewed. I think this is episode 23 here that we're on right here. You're the second person I've interviewed who has said that going into the Air Force was the most important thing that they ever did. And it was Jill Castilla, who's the president of Citizens Bank of Edmond also identified that as well. So I think a lot of times it's easy for us, since we have an all-volunteer force, to kind of forget about what a critical decision that is sometimes, opportunity-wise, for people to go into the military. So tell us a little bit. What was your MOS in the military? Now that's essentially what your job is, what your basic job area
right.
is.
Well, when I joined, I had always kind of thought I would be involved in film. When I was in high school, I took video every year I was in. I did video editing. I used to write scripts and like have my friends act in them. They were pretty terrible, but I had it in my mind that that's what I really wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And when I went and spoke to the Air Force recruiter, he was like, "We have that. You know, they'll tell you anything." Oh yeah, you want to do that? Yep, we have that. You could be a rock star. Yep, we have that. So yeah, they said, you know, we've got video. You can.
That really is true. They go, yeah, you can be a rock star and a sniper.
Oh yeah,
All of the same. Yeah.
And fly a helicopter.
And fly a helicopter and be a sniper and be a jet pilot.
I did almost all those things. No, but yeah. So I intended to go get into video, and that was kind of what I joined and was ready to do. And I made it through basic training, and that was a little intense, but I got through it, and I got to Maryland to DMFOS, which was the Air Force, enlisted school for basically every creative career you can have in any of the branch of the military. So you can study graphic design and photojournalism and writing and video and all those things. And I got there, and there had been some sort of, mix-up that my class wasn't ready. And they told me that it would be like 3 weeks or a considerable in my mind amount of time until my class would be ready. And so until that happened, I was going to have to be a detail airman. And I didn't really know what that meant until the next day when I spent 8 hours sweeping a giant parking lot with a push broom. And I was
like, "You're going to be on some kind of detail, meaning a temporary job to get something done."
Yes, exactly. And I was just kind of like, "I really don't want to spend a month sweeping gravel. I have to think of something else I can do."
Okay.
I was actually, the next day I was vacuuming in the hallway and was in front of my first sergeant's office, and I was kind of eavesdropping a little and overheard her say that there were two openings in the graphic design class. And there was another girl that I knew who was also having to be detail airman. And I was like, "We should go do that." So I, kind of broke policy and popped my head in there and just said, "I am also very good at drawing, so I think I would be really good at this job."
And so you learned two lessons right there, the value of a first sergeant in the military, and number two.
Eavesdropping always pays off.
Number two, initiative. You learned initiative, right, yeah.
Yes, so they did. I mean, I started the next day in graphic design, and it was, I'm not going to say it was effortless or anything, but it was a really natural fit. I got in there. Wow. I enjoyed every bit of it. I mean, it was intense. It was, 6 days a week, long days of drawing and learning all the Adobe products, which in 2000, well, actually, it was 1998, so considerably long ago. But I was learning Adobe Photoshop and, all that kind of stuff.
Which was really complex software for that time.
Oh, right? Yeah. And I had never even seen it before. You go from drawing to like jumping onto a computer and learning all that stuff. But I learned so much there. It was incredible. And when I left, I still had a lot more to learn. Yeah. But I was, prepared to.
But that got you started.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Gave you kind of the framework for thinking about design.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow. So now, moving out from the Air Force, then what happened next after that?
Well, so I was in the military for 8 years, and I reenlisted once, and they sent me to Colorado, which I'd never even been there. I didn't know anything about it. I ended up there. And while I was stationed in Colorado, I went to an event at an advertising agency downtown. It was like a digital advertising agency downtown. And Tim Cooper, my partner at Cooper House and my husband was speaking there. And, you know, he was just smart as anything. And I was super impressed by him. And we ended up sitting next to each other at lunch. And a year later, we got married.
Okay.
So, yeah, I was kind of pulled into his world a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he left that agency a little while after we got married and started his own thing. Mm-hmm. And started building websites. And I think at that point, he kind of started to lay the groundwork and convince me that I should come work with him. And be his designer. And at that point, I'd, you know, maybe designed like one or two websites, like, you know, Air Force stuff, but mm-hmm. just, it, you know, not yeah. at all what he was
right,
doing.
Right.
So I was like, I don't think I can. I don't know how to do it and whatever. So he gave me some, you know, little things to do, and it just started out bit by bit. And then I think we were both making pretty good money doing some freelancing, and he was like, come on, let's just ditch this whole military thing and, you know, we'll start our own thing. I'm like, all right, that sounds like a good plan. So, yeah, once again, didn't think about it too much and
right.
just went for it. But yeah. it has worked out really well.
Well, it has. Tell me something about digital design like that. You're talking like, wow, I didn't know if I could do this or not.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you understand design, can you learn how to make the software work? But if it's the other way around, are you really in trouble? If you really know about software, but you really don't have a mind or really a heart for design, is it really hard at that point?
Well, I think there are a lot of people out there who are not designers who can make adequate websites. But I think
right.
that a really good website is totally a marriage of technology and artistry.
Right.
And I mean, that's a really...
That's why people like your website so well. Anybody
I think
that knows
so.
About business and marketing,
mm-hmm.
I've heard Cooper House Creative come up just in random conversations before.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, well, it should be. And it's because people trust that is really just a little bit cut above kind of usual web design.
Well,
stuff.
I think, you know, there's a lot that goes into making a really, really good website or mm-hmm. a website that stands above its
mm-hmm.
peers
mm-hmm.
in terms of the way it looks and the way it works and all those things. So having a functioning website, that's, you know, everybody wants that.
Yeah, sure.
But having a website that actually looks really beautiful and represents the brand really well
right,
is
right.
all part of that. And do I think it helps that, you know, I'm good at drawing and I have the diligence to, you know, like a mural, you know, that takes a really long time. Talk
yeah.
about project management. You
right.
know what I'm saying? There are things that I've learned in being an artist that absolutely benefit me when I'm working on a brand or working on a website
yeah.
for a client.
Yeah.
And I think that also kind of being an artist, you get used to saying yes to crazy ideas, like
yeah.
do you want to do a 110 foot mural? You know, my instinct is like, no. And then I'm like, nope, you gotta just do it. So big projects that I work on with clients are that same way. I feel
right.
like I end up hearing someone's idea or hearing someone's concept and just saying yes, let's figure
right.
out how we're gonna make this work. Let's figure out how we can make this possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like those things have kind of related to each other.
Yeah. So you make a decision to go in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of found out early about the value of initiative. Tell me, I hear a story about initiative here. You really can't just wait around for somebody to tell you to do something if you're a freelancer, can you? You have to have ideas. You have to be thinking forward all the time, don't you?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I actually come from a family that has a lot of entrepreneurs, we'll call
yeah.
them. They're really just, you know, self-employed. my dad was a fisherman for 20
yeah.
years,
uh-huh.
and he worked for himself. And that's not exactly what you'd call an entrepreneur, but he is certainly the person
right.
that I am most like in my family.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, always had a lot of great ideas and
right.
just a hard worker, works harder than
yeah.
anybody I know. And those kinds of things that I learned from him have absolutely been a huge part of why my business is, you know, done as well as it has.
Do you think let me just ask you about that. That's an interesting point there about hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Do you encounter people, especially people in your own age group, that think that just being clever and creative gets them there, but they don't get the hard work part of it?
I don't know if I would say that it has anything to do with my age group or...
Well, or just anybody.
Yeah.
Broaden that out to anybody.
Yeah, I do think that there are probably some people who try to get by on being clever. And I do think that, actually, sometimes it works remarkably well for people. You know, like right. There's some people that I know that are really clever and also really successful, and they're just lucky
too.
And
yeah.
It works out for them, and you're
right,
like, great.
Yeah.
But, you know, coming from the background like I did, from a family that, you know, we didn't have a lot, mm-hmm. there wasn't much of a leg up. What I got out of it was work hard.
Right.
Work hard. That was my birthright. That's what I was mm-hmm. given to make any of this mm-hmm. work. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's that if you come from a family where, you know, things were given to you or you didn't maybe have to
right.
expect to work hard for things when
yeah.
you were younger, it
yeah.
might be like... You know, you might have a little bit of a sense of entitlement and stuff like that. But I will say that a lot of my clients are my age or older.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically with people that are maybe 10 years or 15 years older than I am, when they hear that I was in the military, they want to work with me.
That speaks,
doesn't
it?
Yeah, because they know that, you know, I learned process early on.
Right.
They expect that I'm the kind of person who is diligent, who, you know, is responsible mm-hmm. and all those kinds of things. And I'm sure people are surprised by it when they're like, oh, she's an artist and she was in the military. Like, how do you tie those two things
yeah.
together? But I do have to say that going back to why was that the most important decision of my life
mm-hmm.
is because I've always been creative. I've always had big ideas
right.
ever since I was a little kid. But without the discipline that I learned in the military,
mm-hmm.
none of this would have happened.
Well, and especially doing a creative job in the military
mm-hmm.
That just kind of forced you to wed those two things together, didn't
mm-hmm.
it? You have to still be creative and be disciplined and turn those reports in on time.
Absolutely.
About your creative process, right? Which some people I talk to just don't get, you know, they just wouldn't get that connection like that you could be creative and in the military like that, you know.
Well, I will say that in design, I've heard people say that, you know, you can do really, really great work when you have very narrow parameters.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the most overwhelming thing in the world to a designer is for the client to say, think outside the box, or, you know, or to just be like, I trust you, you know, go.
Are some of the most terrifying words.
Well, sure. I think as a designer and, you know, owning Cooper House, like my goal when I sit down with a client is
right.
to find out what those parameters
mm-hmm,
are
mm-hmm.
and actually try to figure out a solution within, you know, there's all kinds of parameters, time, budget, you know, the
right.
audience,
yeah.
all these different things happen. And so in the military, you really do have to learn, like, how creative can I be within a very strict set of parameters?
Right.
And so that practice for all those years definitely impacts my ability to be like, okay, a client has a really creative idea. How do I interpret that online?
Mm-hmm.
How do I make this a functional,
right.
responsive, well-made website with,
mm-hmm.
you know, and still accomplish what they want to do?
Mm-hmm.
So there's always like a back and forth between that practicality
right.
and the artistry of, you know, what we do.
Wow. Wow. From a decision as an 18-year-old to join the Air Force.
I know.
That's great. That really is amazing. It was a real wedding there. You've
mm-hmm.
really kind of had two weddings in your life, haven't you?
Yes.
The one you've had to Tim, your husband, and but in that earlier one where all those creative juices, you know, the script writer and the filmmaker, teenage filmmaker, gets into the military, and you have to channel that. You have to stay creative, but channel that within parameters like you're talking about.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So, yeah. Two weddings. How about that?
I know.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I do want to finish with one tiny little statement, though, if you don't mind. A lot of people have asked me, would I tell my own daughters to join the military? And the answer is no, I wouldn't.
Right.
I don't think I knew at the time. As I said, I didn't put a ton of thought into that decision. And I think that there are lots of ways to learn process and discipline.
Right.
And while this worked really well for me, I don't know if it would be something that I would want my own children to
mm-hmm.
do.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the right thing in that, you know, time and space.
For you,
and it
at
worked
that
out.
Time. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It was damn lucky is what it was.
But you did something with it.
Yes.
Everybody experiences luck, you know, experiences mm-hmm. luck every now and then, but some people just sit there with their arms folded and other people get busy. So, yeah. So that, yeah, so you don't, I mean, it doesn't have so much to do with your loyalty to the military as much as you saying that it was the right decision for you mm-hmm. at that time, considering your circumstances, and that your daughters are going to have to find the right decision for them according to their circumstances.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. Well, maybe I should stop spoiling them so much.
Well, yeah, that's kind of a matter of opinion. Anyway.
They're so cute.
All right. Well, Aaron Cooper, thank you very much for meeting with me. It's been a fascinating conversation, and I wish you all the luck in the future, especially with your new big mural project you have coming up in the Wheeler District, and with everything that comes before you here, I wish you very much luck in life.
Thank you so much.
That concludes our interview. There are several ways for you to catch this weekly podcast. Go to our website at intersectionsok.com, where you can subscribe, listen to episodes, read the backstory, and see photos of our guest. On iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and our Facebook page, we are Intersections Oklahoma. On Twitter and Instagram, we are Intersections OK. I always want to hear about the cool people in your life, so write to me. My email address is ideas@intersectionsok.com. Steven Tyler is our awesome production advisor, and I am your host, Brett Dickerson.